You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We Ashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good. Wow, what happened? Excuse me, family. Good morning, African world. Good morning, African. I was laying back, see, in my chair, ran back, and then I'm better now, much better. Good morning, African world. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Hoping you'll get a chance to do all the things that you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, it will get done because you'll do it. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. This program, once again, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And there will be programs that are dated and titled. The other programming we have here is on Monday and Wednesdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Thursday, tomorrow evening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Black Liberation Movement. Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's time for an awakening, family. Time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sunday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney. Activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, on Sunday from 5 to 6. And then at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Make some announcements. I don't do them all the time, but I'll still do them, and maybe even more when I kind of sort this thing out. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Tayemba is ready to take another group of our people home to the motherland next month, April 4th through the 14th, he'll be in Kenya. May 24th to June 5th, Ghana. November 20th to December 1st, Tanzania. February 12th to February 23rd, 2026, Liberia. April 1st to April 13th, 2026, Kemet. April 24th to June 5th, 2026, Ghana. November 19th to November 30th, 2026, Azania. Brothers and sisters, you see, Brother Bomani ain't playing. Future tours upcoming. Of course, he's got Kenya in 2026. He's got Ghana 2027, Tanzania 2027. And of course, there's always opportunities for investments and to repatriate and get all the information you need and on the Pan-African community in Ghana. So check this out. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Also, too, you can give Brother Bomani a call. He's still in town. He's leaving next month, but hey, 404-931-9429. Or drop him an email at Africa for the Africans, AFTA 2010 at MSN.com. And of course, his website is Africa for the Africans, spelled out one word, .org.
This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Habashah Incorporated. HabashahIncorporated.org. HabashahIncorporated.org, the great work that they do. It's a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth and families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. HabashahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group, Ledge, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics, the Ledge Group. The Ledge Group is in 12 projects in six different countries with over 170 employees and over 260 members. Brother and sister, join the Ledge Group because they deal in the area of necessity, of essential, of existence of African people, of all people, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. Become a member of the Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. The Minister of Wellness, Brother Nathaniel Jordan. I'm promoting him. I hope that he is doing well. I know that he is. I hope that he is still in Africa. Or if he's not, if he's home, if he's back home, if he's back here in the States, get a hold of him and talk about what experiences he had and what he's doing and so forth. But you can go to his website, theministerofwellness.com. Theministerofwellness.com. Okay? Check it out for yourself. The other wellness program, Smile Pharmacy, you know, they're having a problem with their website, so I can't predict and give you a count on Smile Pharmacy, SMAIFARMACY, smilepharmacy.com. No, the website is something wrong, so we can move on to Moses West, the Moses West Foundation. That's right. The Moses West Foundation, they design and implement advanced atmospheric water generator, the AWG, the Atmospheric Water Generation Technology, to deliver sustainable water, sanitation, and hygiene solutions globally, ensuring communities have reliable access to the resource that is essential for life, for health and well-being, water. Go to the Moses West Foundation. MosesWestFoundation.org, and you see for yourself, family. You see for yourself what this man has done and what he's doing. The many missions across the world, countries served, millions and millions of gallons produced. The atmospheric water generation machine, the Moses West Foundation. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located here in Atlanta in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy. It's down the street from me. I live on Cascade, and Abernathy makes a turn northward. And to near going close to MLK, which is, of course. But WDOT is right here at 878 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And, of course, WDOT has what you need, health drinks, smoothies, dry goods, all kind of pastries. Vegan dishes on the weekend. That's right, on Saturday and Sunday, you can purchase vegan dishes the weekend. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia. She has a fine selection of books, brothers and sisters. Postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, and gift certificates, and so much more. She's in the Medu Bookstore. The Medu Bookstore is in the Greenbrier Mall. If you want to give her a call, if you're in the Atlanta area and you need her, the Greenbrier Mall, stop in, see her. But if you want to give her a call because you're looking for a particular book, give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore that we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. That is east of Atlanta. Get on I-20 and go east and exit 74. Exit 74. That's Main Street for Lithonia. Get off, make a left. Now you're going north for about a mile and a half. And on the left will be the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, where my good brother, Brother Gazemde Ajamu, is the proprietor. And if you want to give him a call at 770-305-6373, 770-305-6373. There is light in the Black Dot family. And then you jump in your ride, head back the other way. Now you're going south. And when you come to I-20, going south, make a left again. And, okay, now you're still going east. And you make the next exit, exit 75, Turner Hill Road. Make a right on the Turner Hill Road, three lights, and make another right. And on the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market, the new Black Wall Street Market family. All right. Homeland Village. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop open from Tuesday through Sunday at 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. And they have everything, believe me. 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia. And he has African soap, holistic health and beauty products, oils, incense, CDs, DVDs, literature, jewelry, fashions, furniture. Whew, man. And so much more. He also has a restaurant. That's right. He serves vegan dishes. He has a restaurant on the premises. That's Brother Abija. Brother Abija Changa. Give Brother Abija a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon, Georgia. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Sister Gabby, doing great work on the island of Haiti in the northwest corner of Haiti. Go online for yourself to see the great work she's doing with young people, with education. You know, helping them with entrepreneurship and sustainable agriculture. She deserves to be supported, family. Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, Haiti.org. Sonjay-Haiti.org. Sister Gabby Aurelia. Ackerman Institute, brothers and sisters, Brother Baruti deserves to be supported. The great work that he and Mama Yah are doing. So you can go online to Ackerman Institute. And you can use PayPal. If you use PayPal, Yah Baruti, YAABARITUI, YahBaruti.com for PayPal. If it's Cash App, it's $ Yah, YAA, the letter M, Baruti, BARUTI. And to use Cash App to make your donations, and brothers and sisters, they're greatly appreciated. Greatly appreciated. So, all right. to Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. To Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I tell you. You know, brothers and sisters, they be sending me some really good stuff. I tell you. They really do. Okay. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And Baba Baruti, when I stopped by and talked to him and Mama Yah, said they're going to produce another Inyasa Sim. There's already two volumes. And so another one on the way, family. Another one on the way. All right. March 12th. The basic difference between a socialist party and a capitalist society does not lie in their methods of producing wealth, but in the way that wealth is distributed. I say, Julius Nyerere. Pan-African nationalist socialism is the only political philosophy that can bring us safely back home. I repeat, Pan-African nationalist socialism is the only political philosophy that can bring us safely back home. Pan-African, of course, means the inclusion of all African people globally in this effort and benefit. No matter how diverse or tainted our blood may be, we are one family forming one nation. Nationalism speaks to the political character of African people and turns our attention toward the motherland as a natural home of our political core. Nationalism also centers us in the land question, directing our thoughts toward the need for a stable, protected, identifiable geographical place where we have our most ancient, profound roots. That's right. Nationalism. Socialism is descriptive of a nature of our interaction with each other, economics and otherwise. It makes the needs of individual people, their families, and surrounding community the social priority. A deep sense of honor and obligation rule this way of social relationships. And, of course, this deeply personal priority goes all the way up to the national level, but never loses its humanistic simplicity as we shift our focus from micro to macro levels. Ashe. Affirm, my wealth is my community. Affirm, my wealth is my community. March 13th. What do I care about death in the cause of the redemption of Africa? Oh, I'm sorry, family. I must have jumped the gun. That's tomorrow. Oh, I should have read March 11th. Our work has only begun. Our culture must strike the blow if we would be free. Ida B. Wells. This is very important that we have. We're talking about International Women's Day, and we're highlighting African women today. And if there's an American African woman to be highlighted, there's a number of them, but Ida B. Wells is right there. Ida Barnett. Yes, Ida B. Wells. We are at war. We have been at war with Europeans and other aggressors against our children, selves, ancestors, in the spirit of over 4,000 years. And since the battle is still raging, we must defend our children by preparing them to fight with the will and commitment of those Africans who entered the battlefield to engage our enemies from the start. War is waged on every institutional front. We battle our enemies spiritually, intellectually, economically, politically, and in the home. No institution has the monopoly on the battlefield for the sanity and physical safety of our people. Knowing this and knowing that, Out of misdirected thought and fear of retaliation, we have consistently placed every institution before that of the military. We need to reconsider the military's role in our liberation. The military side of our relationship with others who have standing armies, which they readily used in maneuvers against us, should never be subjugated to a drive to attain peace by any cost. We must build our armies and prepare our children to man them, to fight. We must prepare them not for the slave mentality that fears death for any reason, but for the liberated mentality which willingly sacrifices its physical existence to ensure the geopolitical, economic, and cultural solvency of their people and the generations after them. A powerful and dedicated military is a necessity. It's a necessary institution and instrument to that end. Ashe. Affirm, I am preparing our children for the front line. Affirm, I am preparing our children for the front line. I can say now, although I read the 12th before the 11th, but that's the Inya Sisim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah. Yes, this is International Women's Day. In fact, the specific day was March 8th. But it didn't always start that way. In fact, I'm going to play a little piece of how it started, and we'll talk about it. And the fact that this is African Perspectives. So what we do on African Perspectives is we tell you about how it is from an African perspective. That's right. Because it's different. Because we different. You know? We ain't the European. No, we're not. No, it's not. We're not the Europeans. That's for damn sure. Okay. Let me see. Is that the beginning? Okay. Okay. Here's how it began, family.
Office for the Social Democratic Party used her platform. In 1910, Germany's Clara Zetkin, leader of the Women's Office for the Social Democratic Party, used her platform to push for one day where all nations both advocated for and celebrated women. A year later, it happened. Women in Austria, Denmark, Germany, and Switzerland observed the first International Women's Day on March 19, 1911. 3 years later, women in the UK observed and protested for women's suffrage. More than six decades passed before the United Nations celebrated the first International Women's Day in 1975. In the years that followed, global participation waned until the internet age. In 2001, InternationalWomen'sDay.com launched, and a few years later, hashtags for each year's theme did too. In 2011, President Barack Obama proclaimed March Women's History Month and encouraged Americans to celebrate the accomplishments of women throughout history. But while the U.S. recognizes International Women's Day, it's not an official holiday here, like it is in more than two dozen other countries worldwide. And that's Connecting the Dots. I'm Alexandra Lewis for 9 News.
That's right, Connecting the Dots, family. All right. Yeah. You know, they had to have a Women's Day. Europeans dominate the culture and dominate information and dominate the world. I'm just being real. Because other cultures don't have issues with women. I know the main culture, as far as I'm concerned, is us, African culture. Any culture that you come into that. If you are Asian or Chinese, that culture, that's to you is the main culture. And then you look at things from that perspective. And so I look at things from an African perspective, not African American, because we have been created as a subculture in this society. And we are alienated and ostracized from the dominant culture. But we do things in a way here that causes us some issues. So, yeah. But African culture, historically, in ancient times of antiquity, all the way to the present, Africans did not have that issue between men and women. There's always been a respect for women. Now, understand something. There's kind of change. Yes, it has, because of why? Colonization and the influence of Europeans. Europeans have this problem. Other cultures don't have this problem. Even in ancient times, the Greeks just could not deal with the fact of how men and women got along in ancient Kemet. Because they didn't have that. They alienated the women in ancient Greece. The women went where? To the island of Lesbos. That's why women who want women or who want the affection of women, want to be with other women, are called lesbians. They went to the island of Lesbos. Because men had alienated them, ostracized them, because men were lovers of themselves and children in Greek society. I can even go further with the Greek society. But Caucasians do what, family? They praise Greece, because that is their classical period. Instead of looking at Greece and laying open all the ugliness to correct it. And so now, just like I just seen, as I was preparing for this, I saw, transgender women, men who changed to be women, and how they are happy about that. It's just like my lady, who, of course, she's a queen. That's right. I'm talking about queens today. I'm talking about African queens. She's a queen. She sent me a piece. There's some congressional hearing, and the chairperson referred to the trans, because there is a transgender woman who is a congressperson, but who was on that committee, and the chairperson, old white man, referred to her as Mr. And one of the congresspersons, because she didn't say nothing, but he came to her defense seriously and jumped on him, and then the chairperson, with his weak ass, he dismissed the hearing. This hearing is adjourned, because he wasn't going to say it. So to me, that's, you may not like it. There's a lot of shit I don't like, Man. So yeah, International Women's Day, brothers and sisters, we always treated our women, because we recognize that our species have is vitally important to our existence. It's vitally important to our existence. In fact, family, if we don't have our species have, we don't live, we don't procreate, we don't sustain ourselves. Do something here. Hold on, family. Okay. Come on now. Sometimes. Well, what I'm working with, too, I've got my iPad, and it's pretty old. So there we go. There we go, family. Okay. Okay, I'm going through a few things here. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. We're going to play this particular piece. And then I'm going to play the African Queens after the break. So I'll play this particular piece. Okay. The role, the historic role of African women, female deities, and council of elders.
Strong black woman, whoa. One day we love our communion. Black woman, strong woman, she's like the rising sun.
In general terms, a woman's status in all levels of ancient European civilization like Greece and Rome had limited rights and not seen as equal to men. Voting rights, for example, was denied from these ancient civilizations to more modern nations like America, the UK, and France. Women in these Western societies had to lead suffrage movements and demand their voices be heard before their right to vote was even awarded. This was not the case in African societies, as some of the greatest rulers and leaders and military commanders in African history were women. And we will explain this later. Due to outside forces of imperialism, racism, and colonialism, our traditional culture was nearly beaten out of shape, and African women have been oppressed in three areas of society in class, race, and gender. And in turn, African men in the diaspora and on the continent played a role in the oppression and suppression of our women. Our women were discouraged and pushed out of major roles of the anti-colonial and civil rights struggles throughout the African world. Even in experiencing all that, African women still played critical roles in our liberation movements around the world. Some of our women were able to go against the grain, but the information is largely hidden or hard to find on these subjects. Our great leaders like Kwame Nkrumah, Amilcar Cabral, and Malcolm X, and others, really understood that the roles of women in Africa and the diaspora and throughout the world had to return to its original and historic place in all levels of society. In the rise of the Black feminist movement, or the Miss Independent Black Woman movement in America, that started in the late 80s and really took flight in the 90s and early 2000s, was actually reflected largely in the music of the female R&B groups like TLC and Destiny's Child. Although most conscious folk understand that some of the reasons because of this response that women were oppressed by class, race, and gender. The message, though, was still misrepresented and didn't reflect what true liberation for women should be. Male chauvinism and black feminism will not help us towards liberation, as it only will heighten the gender wars between us. The black woman will never be solely independent of the black man and vice versa if we are truly wanting total liberation from our current conditions. As Dr. Francis Cress Wilson said, it is much easier for white supremacy to control female-headed households, wherein black females must confront a white, male-dominated power system alone. She goes on to say, when both the black male and black female take up the struggle for justice against white supremacy, they are endowed with the strongest possible insurance that they will remain united. They are united in a common effort against injustice, and simultaneously, they express the strongest possible statement about respect and love for themselves as individuals. In doing this, the black male and black female are declaring that they have conferred upon themselves the highest possible value, which is essential if there's to be self and group defense. So in this film, we understand that the masses of African women today, as is true with African men, are unclear about their historic roles. But we want to focus more so on our women, since most of the history of our women's roles and contributions in African society and the world over are viewed in lesser significance and largely hidden or dismissed. Let's start with the ancient African spiritual and religious systems, where the female deity played a prominent role in various African cultures. In ancient Kemet, aka ancient Egypt, the goddess Nut was the goddess of the sky and all heavenly bodies, a symbol of resurrection and rebirth. The goddess Isis was the goddess of magic, marriage, healing, and motherhood. Maat was the goddess of truth, justice, and balance. She prevented the creation from reverting to chaos and judged the deeds of the dead with her feather. One of Egypt's most celebrated philosophers, Ptah Hotep, his central theme was the teachings and the rule of Maat. The rule of Maat is simultaneously the precision, the truth, the harmony, and the coherence of the universe. From this flows civilizations and society's equilibrium. Provided that there exists a pharaoh willing and able to accept Maat in every sphere, from the most abstract to the most concrete, it is crucial to act Maat and speak Maat. In the absence of Maat, reign disorder, injustice, violence, and the realm of darkness. Therefore, come what may, the sage must follow the path of Maat, and let Maat be the inspiration of his words and deeds. In the culture of the Yoruba people, located in the southwestern Nigeria and southern Benin in West Africa, Limanja is the divine mother goddess, divine goddess of the sea and mother of mankind. In the Ashanti culture of West Africa, we have Asanseya, also referred to as Old Woman Earth, the goddess of creation, of humans, and receiver of them at death. Now we move to the Dahomey culture, which is a West African kingdom that is now southern Benin. Mawu represented the supreme goddess, the creator of all things. Mawu is worshipped by the Fon people of Benin and West Africa as a moon goddess and creator of all things. Now we move to the African culture of Bakongo of the Congo, Nzambi, the great goddess who created everything. She played the role of justice and rewarded and punished according to the deeds of man. So as we can see in ancient African and traditional African spiritual and religious systems, it is therefore less sexist in its image of the spiritual world as compared to other world religions. So Bonfu Somme, who is a contemporary leading figure of African spirituality, describes the council of elders in her tribe of the Dagar people of Burkina Faso. She says, the council of elders is selected by all of those who have gone through the elder initiation. They are selected according to the Dagara understanding of the elemental forces that form the universe. We have five different elements: earth, water, mineral, fire, and nature. Each one of these elements is represented on the council by a woman and a man. The council is thus made up of five females and five male elders. These various examples prove that the roles of women were very prominent in the traditional African society prior to the slave trade, colonialism, and external, outside, spiritual, and religious systems. Women in on the council of elders, female deities in religious and spiritual systems, held up the other half of the sky. Both traditional African religions and goddess religions created prominent leadership roles for women. Long before the monotheistic religions concentrated power in the hands of overwhelming male priests and functionaries, African religion and goddess religion put women at the center of the religious experience. However, despite these obvious similarities, such as the cherishing of woman's divine role as creator of life, these two traditions differ from each other as well. Specifically, the goddess religion came close to establishing a gynocracy in religious life, whereas the African religions came to both offer both men and women an equal seat at the table in matters of religion.
As you can see, we have always honored our women. We have always honored, only till we come under the influence of Europeans and embraced their culture, which of course we've been treated in their culture with disdain and disgust. And so we, in their culture, created a subculture. But we act out in that manner. Because that's who they are. But who we are, we recognize the importance of men and women in a symbiotic relationship, in a relationship of complementarity. In a relationship where her value is equally as important as my value. And we work together for family and community with cultural continuity and nationhood. You can't have one without the other. In those religions, the Honorable Nana Dr. John Henry Clark said they ain't nothing but male chauvinistic murder cults. Let me say it again. They ain't nothing but male chauvinistic murder cults. Look at the history. Look at the history. And the religion itself is not historical. The religion itself that they believe and whatever deities and so is not historical. But neither are Africans because it's spiritual. It's spiritual. Even when you look at Kemetic, when you look at Jehudi, the head of an ibis bird, because what Kemetic people did is they looked at nature. They looked at nature. That's why Heru is a falcon. He's had tremendous vision. So we as African people, we understood the importance of being together, the importance of family, the importance of community, the importance of nationhood. And we exemplified that. That's why in this month of honoring women, yes, we do it all the time. There's no set day, March 8th, that we would do it. Now, I'm down with recognizing women, but we do it every day. We honor our women because we know without them we would not be. You know, I told you how messed up the Western society, and particularly Caucasians, are. I did a piece some years ago on the on the artificial womb where men could have babies. They got rid of women. About women. That's just like cold north where they evolved. You know, a woman had to acquiesce to the situation because she did not want to be out in that in cold and dark environment with animals and other things that are happening out there. So she just had to take whatever abuse that son of a bitch gave her. How he sexualized her. How he physically abused her. She had to take it. Otherwise you kick her ass out in the elements, in that environment. So this is the understanding we as African people must have. We don't follow the European in nothing. We have a tradition. We have a history. So we do honor women, and to me it's just like some days, you know, you say we do it all the time, but we're specifically highlighting. Just like we have African History Month. Let me hear some African and American African History Month. We have African Liberation Day in May. African Liberation Day, which is huge and key and critical, more so than anything, is to talk about and to focus on African liberation from the madness that we have been subjugated to. We need to be liberated. So, we have so much work, don't we, family? We do. We have so much work. But one thing that we need to understand, our potential is greater going into this future if we utilize it than anybody's. With the land, the resources, and the population? No, I ain't talking about no damn population control on our continent like the Europeans talking about it. No. The British talking about, well, there's too many people in Africa. Give a damn. That's our benefit. Our youth, that's our benefit. Knowing how to utilize that potential. That's what we have to do. Yeah. We're going to take a break. Let me come back from the break. I'll play my good brother home team and the 10 African queens. And then we'll open up the line for discussion and all kinds of opinions, you know. The madness. Once again, my iPad is acting funny here, family. So, we're going to play this piece, and then when we come back from the break, more information on African, as I say it, African Women's Day. All right, family.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time For an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds, Woman of the World. And truly, our women have been women of the world, the models. I tell you, you know, I love black women. I really do. I really do. I love black women. And no, that's right. No snow bunnies here. We're going to play this piece. It's Brother Home Team. I'm quite sure you heard him if you've gone online. Outstanding young man. I would love to have him on the program. He's made some tremendous videos. He really has. He's made some tremendous videos on our history. You know, so we're gonna okay, yeah. Okay, hold on, family. Here we go.
African world, it's your boy Home Team, man. I'm back at it with another video of African history, culture, and worldview. And today I want to talk about the top 10 queens in African history. To begin, this is not a popularity contest. So the standard of this list is not solely based on the queen's popularity, but many other factors like power, influence. This just might be the most important list for the 21st century Afro-descended woman. It's your boy Home Team, man. I'm back at it with another video of African history, culture, and worldview. And today I want to talk about the top 10 queens in African history. To begin, this is not a popularity contest. So the standard of this list is not solely based on the queen's popularity, but many other factors like power, influence, and overall impact on African history. Let's begin. Coming in at number 10, we have Queen Nefertiti. Honestly, the only reason she made this list is because I pretty much couldn't ignore her. Her popularity has certainly stood the test of time, and that is greatness in and of itself. But she also passed my other specifications. Nefertiti's husband is pretty much known for ridding Egypt of all of its gods and advancing the idea of monotheism with the worship of the supreme god, Aten. Although he is largely credited with this, Queen Nefertiti played a large role in maintaining this idea in support of her husband. She was literally a part of one of the largest religious revolutions in Egyptian history, outside of the 25th dynasty Nubian kings. On top of that, she was well known for her beauty. Number 9, we have Queen Gudi. Now, virtually no one knows about Queen Gudi, largely because Western scholars pretty much ignore her. But Gudi was a legendary Jewish queen that's known throughout African oral history. She's largely believed to have come from the Sadamo people of southern Ethiopia. Now, Gudi single-handedly destroyed the Aksumite Empire, located in northern Ethiopia. She burned down churches, she destroyed monuments, and she almost eliminated the entire royal family of Aksum. Even today, in the Ethiopian countryside, Ethiopians speak of her reign as queen. She's widely known throughout Ethiopian oral history, but even the Arab scholar Ibn Hakel spoke about Queen Gudi. He states, and I quote, "The country of the Habasha has been ruled by a woman for many years now. She has killed the king of the Habasha, who was called Hadani. Until today, she rules with complete independence in her own country and the frontier areas of the country of the Hadana in the southern part of the Habasha. She's one of the few African queens that literally struck terror in the hearts of indigenous African people. Now that's power." Number 8, we have Queen Amina. Queen Amina was a legendary warrior queen of the Hausa people in northern Nigeria. The earliest account of Queen Amina proclaims that she was the first to bring about civilization amongst the Hausa people. She was widely known for her military exploits and extending Hausa rule and influence in different regions. She's credited with the construction of Hausa walls built around the city for protection. Man, talk about starting from the bottom. She single-handedly took her people to the next level. Coming in at number 7, we have Queen Amanashekoto. Queen Amanashekoto was a Kandake queen in ancient Nubia. She came from a line of Kandake Nubian queens that would literally fight in battle. She became very popular after her pyramid in Nubia was discovered with loads of jewelry, hinting at her vast wealth. But she makes the list because of her legendary status. She's most known for having defeated a Roman army sent by Augustus to conquer Nubia after Rome broke a treaty made by her mother. By the way, Rome made several attempts to try and conquer Nubia and failed miserably, most of them thwarted by black women in particular. Number 6, we have Queen of Sheba. The Queen of Sheba has to be one of the most legendary, influential queens in all of African history. Her legend even extends outside of Africa, and she's known by many different people by many different names. The Hebrews know her as Sheba, the Arabs know her by Bilkis, people of Kenya call her Nakuti, and the Ethiopians call her Queen Makeda. Her interaction with the Hebrew king Solomon is one of the most legendary stories in all the Abrahamic religions. A new religion was even formed because of her story alone. Her influence on the minds of Afro-descended people as a whole will probably never die. At number 5, we have Ya Asantewaa. Ya Asantewaa was a queen in the Ashanti Empire in Ghana. She led the war against the British Empire in the 20th century. What makes Ya Asantewaa so unique is the powerful impact she had on the minds of her people. Now, many queens had a very powerful impact on their people, but Ya Asantewaa's impact was very unique. In a meeting of the Ashanti elites to discuss how to deal with the British and to secure the return of their exiled king, there was a disagreement among them. Apparently, Ya Asantewaa heard enough, and she stood up and addressed the Ashanti men. And the following words ensued, and I quote, "Now I see that some of you fear to go forward to fight for our king. If it was in the brave days of Osei Tutu, Okumfo Onoke, and Opoku Weah, Chiefs would not sit down to see their king to be taken away without firing a shot. No European could have dared speak to the chiefs of Asante in the way the governor spoke to you this morning. Is it true that the bravery of Asante is no more? I cannot believe it. It cannot be. I must say this. If you, the men of Asante, will not go forward, then we will. We, the women, will. I shall call upon my fellow women. We will fight. We will fight till the last of us falls in the battlefields. With these words, she single-handedly boosted the morale of the entire empire, and she is immortalized in Ghana today for it. Number four, we have Queen Zenga. Queen Zenga was the queen of the Bunu people in Angola. Her claim to fame was the war she waged against the Portuguese during the slave trading throughout the region. She would frequently manipulate European politics to her own benefit and the benefit of her people. Queen Zenga would literally fight in battle, and she waged a 30-year war against the Portuguese, and she even welcomed runaway slaves with open arms. She formed an alliance with the Dutch and gained much respect from one Dutch general in particular. The Portuguese made several attempts to try and kill Queen Zenga, but all were unsuccessful. The Portuguese were never able to gain a stronghold over Angola as long as Queen Zenga was alive. Even European scholars praised Zenga because of her intelligence. Now at number three, we have Queen Amanitori. Queen Amanitori was another Kandake queen in ancient Nubia. She breaks my top three because she was the last great builder of ancient Kush. The quantity and quality of her buildings and temples indicate that her reign was one of the most successful in all of Kushite history. Now, what solidified her in my top three was her religious tolerance she seemed to have possessed during her reign. What makes any ruler great is their ability to be open-minded to different worldviews and even beliefs. And Queen Amanitori is mentioned in the Bible as such. According to the Christian Bible, Queen Amanitori allowed her eunuch to go to Jerusalem to worship and to pray. Now, Queen Amanitori certainly wasn't a Christian, but the fact that she allowed people in her empire to practice their beliefs is pretty 21st century-like, way ahead of her time. She was certainly an amazing woman. Coming in at number two, we have Queen Tai. Now, Queen Tai was one of the most politically influential queens in Egyptian history, and she was also the grandmother of King Tut. She literally pioneered the blueprint of foreign relations for other African queens. She possessed a great deal of power during her husband and her son's reign. Queen Tai became her husband's trusted advisor and confidant, and she gained a lot of respect from foreign dignitaries. Foreign leaders were willing to deal directly through her. She continued to play an active role in foreign relations, and she was even the first Egyptian queen to have her name recorded on official acts. Not only did she win the hearts of her people, but she seemed to have genuinely won the heart of her husband, especially considering the fact that most marriages back then were political in nature. Her husband devoted a number of shrines to her and even built temples for her in Nubia, and she was even worshipped as a goddess. It's largely believed that she was actually of Nubian extraction. He even made an artificial lake for her. Many Egyptologists like David O'Connor take great interest in Queen Tai. He says, and I quote, "The unprecedented thing about Tai is not where she came from, but what she became. No previous queen ever figured so prominently in her husband's lifetime. Tai regularly appeared beside Amenhotep III in statuary, tomb and temple reliefs, and stela, while her name is paired with his on numerous small objects, such as vessels and jewelry, not to mention the large commemorative scarabs, where her name regularly follows his in the dateline. New elements in her portraiture, such as the addition of cow's horns and sun discs, attributes of the goddess Hathor, to her headdress and her representation in the form of a sphinx, an image formerly reserved for the king, emphasize her role as the king's divine, as well as earthly partner. As you can see, she was a very powerful, influential woman. And finally, what you all have been waiting for, coming in at number one, we have Queen Amonarenus. Queen Amonarenus was a Kandaki queen of Nubia. She is hands down the most popular Nubian queen in all of African history. She made the number one spot because of her combination of attributes. These attributes are bravery, influence, military might, and even trash talk. Her story goes like this. The Romans conquered Egypt and pretty much tried to tax Nubians living in the area, trying to make Nubia some sort of vassal state. And Queen Amonarenus wasn't having it. So she attacked the Romans in Egypt, defeated them, brought back war captives, and cut off the head of a statue of Augustus, where she buried it under a Nubian temple so her people could literally walk all over it. Now, of course, the Romans retaliated, and they even had some success pushing the Nubians back down into Nubia. But Queen Amonarenus came back with a huge army, reportedly even gaining some support from the interior of Africa, and she began to march on the Romans. Now, apparently, Augustus wanted no part of that, and a treaty was signed, which gave in to all the demands of the Nubians. It's been said that Queen Amonarenus sent a bundle of golden arrows to Augustus, and a messenger spoke to him saying, and I quote, "This gift is from the Candace. If you want peace, this is a token of her warmth and friendship. If you want war, keep the arrows, because you're going to need them." And so Augustus cut his losses and apparently kept those arrows. Not only did Queen Amonarenus defend her homeland against the Romans, but she basically G'd one of the most powerful men in world history. But yo, guys, I'm all out. It's your boy, Home Team. Know thyself. Remember your ancestors. Peace.
Peace, family. Love that brother. Yeah. Queen Amonarenus. Tell you. Great history, don't we, family? We really do. We have a great history. I wish that we would come together on it and begin to look at things that were good and worked and begin to implement them so we can come back on the stage of human history as free and proud and productive people. Ashe. Yeah. Take your calls. This is African Women's Day. Women's Month, International Women's Month. As I said earlier, that we didn't need that. Europeans needed that. Caucasian women fought for that recognition. As you can see by basically what I've played here and what I talk about, we always honored our women. We always recognize the importance of womanhood, motherhood. We recognize it, and we revere it and understand it as men, because we need each other. As I say in the libation to open this program, we need each other. When you look at art from the Medunature on the walls and the temples, when you look at mirror texts, the word pyramid is not an African word, Kemetic word, it's mirror. So when you look at mirror texts, it shows that there's always been that complementarity. And there's always been the respect for children, the offspring, because they must be reared, they must be guided. And the reason why many of our young men, and particularly, are so astray is because of lack of men in their lives. Sisters can't be a man. Yes, could a sister raise a young man to be a man? It's possible. She exposes him to other men, to things that men do. She encourages him. Yes, I can't. I'm not going to say, you know, but then there's so many men who weren't raised to be men. Many have become feminized. And homosexuality is not African. I'm just keeping it real. Homosexuality is part of Western culture. It's not African. Now, Baba Manahochi, his wife, gave me my name at a naming ceremony. And when she transitioned, I was at the firehouse, and I immediately contacted the chief. I had to go pay respects to her. Did not know she had found out she had passed. Had to pay respects to her. And they moved here to Atlanta. And I knew some brothers who work with Manahochi. In fact, there's a school that has his picture. And one of the things that I've always remembered is that I've traveled many parts of Africa. Homosexuality was not part of the culture, even in many of these places. That is not us. That is not us. If you want to get in on this conversation, hit star twice. Hit star twice. Some of you have been hanging out a while. I appreciate that. Appreciate your patience. I hope you enjoyed some of the information that I have provided today that I played, but also do commentary. And, of course, we like to get your African perspective. So hit star twice, and you can join this conversation. Let me catch Brother Jay. He just jumped in. Brother Jay, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Oh, I just jumped on, man.
Okay.
What's happening? What you talking about today?
We're talking about it's International Women's Month, March. The International Women's Day is March 8th. I guess they designated that, and because I had guests and so forth, I chose today to talk about women. And of course, I'm talking about it from an African perspective, because developing a Women's Day, yeah, that we didn't have that problem, you know, alienation from women, ostracizing women. That's not us. We never done that. We understood the importance of women, their responsibilities, the importance there our species have. There are complements. There's somebody who we understand are necessary for us as a people to continue to move forward in the ideal of family. So no, you know, that's not us. The European had that problem. In fact, what I played is how International Women's Day started with, of course, was a Caucasian woman. Started and then it picked up again, and you know, and in the 70s and so forth. And of course, we got involved because we are like a subculture in this dominant culture. And of course, if they do it, then you know. But the bottom line is, we recognize women, and so if there is a day to celebrate women, we celebrate women, but we celebrate women every day. Because we understand the importance of women. So I played the 10 African queens of importance based upon my brother home team, you know, his thing. And then we also had a piece that I did on women earlier. So, you know, we recognize that, Brother Jay. And I know you. How's your queen?
Recognize the sisters in how would one say, in the way that things are going today, man? I mean, without the sisters, where would we honestly be?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. On the continent on the continent as well as in the diaspora. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are some real serious times, man. And sometimes I wonder if our people really understand how serious these times are for African people.
Well,
and it's also glorious. It's also a glorious time for African people too, because of the way that things are moving forward. And in order for them to move forward, you gotta have the woman. If the woman is not there with you,
there's no doubt about it.
You not going nowhere.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the white man. It's the white man who hates his women.
Yep, I pointed that out.
Men don't hate women like the white man do.
I pointed that out.
If it was up there, he wouldn't even have a woman. If the truth be told.
I pointed that out. And, you know, about a few years ago, number of years ago, I did a program on the artificial womb and how Caucasian men would rather have an artificial womb and they have a baby to get rid of women, period. You know, that's deep, but it's true, you know?
Well, you know, in all truthfulness, Oshie, the white man only wants to control the woman. He doesn't want to nurture her or do anything that's on the level of moving forward with a woman. They just want to control her. You know, I mean, look at the laws that they make in this country in regards to dealing with women.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fooling nobody. I think they think in their minds that they are, but they not fooling nobody.
Well, the Caucasian man who believed that he is God and has placed himself on the pedestal. And women had to march, suffrage movement for rights and privileges to own property, to do this, that, and that, and other education, the whole bit. So you know if what she went through, you know we're going through more as a people, as Africans. Because in the white man's mind, the European's mind, the Caucasian's mind, the Yoruba's mind, we're not really human. And the Supreme Court, with Chief Justice Tandy in the Dred Scott decision, they said it, that a black man has no rights that a white man is bound to respect. And I maintain that is the mentality to this very day. And it will always be the mentality to this day in the future. Because that's how they think.
Well, you know, in all truthfulness, the black man doesn't even have to, and it's in the law, be respected by the white man. White man don't have to show us any respect. So if that's the case, what do we have to show black women?
Yeah.
I mean, if you know what, black woman has survived at the hands of the white man. It just amazes me every time I see a black woman with a cracker, because I know her mama and daddy ain't teaching shit.
Yeah.
She don't know nothing about her history or her culture to ever lay down with that dog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And
the funny thing is, you know, you got black men who go down there who have supposed consciousness and all that with white woman. I ain't never gonna lie and say I ain't had a white woman before. Mm-hmm. But you know, at that time I was a fool. I didn't know what I know now. Now that I know what I know now, I mean, you know, why would anybody in their right mind want to ball a syphilitic pus? I mean, we just get caught up in these situations because nobody teaches us. My father never told me or said certain things about the white woman. I mean, I'll be honest. I tell everybody this straight up. Until I was around 8 years old, I thought my father was a white man, and I didn't want him going nowhere with me. I didn't want to be around him or nothing. Because he was that light. You know what I mean? I mean, he could basically, in the right situation, pass for being white. He was that light, even though as he got older, mm-hmm. which would bug me out, he got a little darker. So today, no, seriously, as he got older, he got darker, but, you know, his hair color and all that. I was so, you know, but my mother's real dark, so I didn't get caught up in that,
right.
that situation. But right. yeah, but then as you get into older and you get into consciousness and you start to read and things of that nature, I mean, all I can say is this. There's no person on this planet more barbaric than the white man. I mean, I haven't seen it. There's no. It's like I always say, whenever a white person start talking BS to me, I just ask them one question. When we start talking about white people, I say, could you name me one place on the planet where any people of color have been living amongst harmony, amongst themselves, and you ain't going there and F shit up?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't never answer the question. Black people can't even answer the question. Because there is no place.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Jay. Keep
All
listening.
Right, my brother.
Keep listening, dear brother. Appreciate
you
it.
You know I am.
All right.
Until 1 o'clock. I'm on the chat.
Okay. Good afternoon. Dear brother, how you doing? Good afternoon. Are you there?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Hey, Baba Oshie, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's happening?
Oh, just another day. Just trying to relax, and of course, another day at work and multitasking. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting YouTube piece. I'm gonna have to go and when I get home this evening, review that again myself. You know, of all of the queens that were mentioned, I would have thought that Yasantewa would have been a little bit higher up. I think she was like five or six or something.
Yeah, right. I think it was five. Yeah,
she was a tough woman. And I
yes, she was.
I'm not sure. Please correct me. But didn't she off her own brother?
I'm not sure of that history. I'm not sure if she did that or if Nzinga did that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Because I know.
But they were both. Those are two true, real warrior queens, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they were
uh-huh.
fighters, man. You know, Yasantewa with the British and Nzinga with the Portuguese. They were real fighters, you know.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's interesting today, especially as it pertains to African women, that. Sometimes I wonder, have they gotten their fill of us as men, right? And I just kind of wonder what goes through their minds on how do they see us in this 21st century as us being melanated African men. And so, I don't know what kind of venue you would have for something like that. I'm sure it'll probably also take on consideration psychology. But I'm just curious, have black women considered themselves having their fill with us as black men, and they're just kind of off into the sunset doing their own thing?
Well, there's some obviously are, because, you know, they've been deeply influenced. We've been here for so many hundreds of years, and you know, so we've acted like Caucasian men and alienated our women. You know, and then of course too, many of us, particularly as the 60s coming forward, I would say the 70s more importantly, 70s, 80s coming forward, did not choose them to be mates, chose Caucasian women, other cultural women, you know. So, you know, many of our sisters, yeah, they can't stand our ass. But there are sisters who understand the dynamics and the history, and they love us. They revere us. They understand what we have gone through, but they also understand the importance of them and us coming together to continue our journey in human life, you know. We need each other. Well, as I say all the time.
Yeah, you know, and all honor and respect to our deceased sister Angie Stone, who had that piece called Black Brother.
Yeah, that, I played that. I played that the other day. I played that the other day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we need each other. We need to continue to need each other, and so we can support one another, I think,
sure.
as well. So, as always, still listening and learning, Bubba Oshie, and until next time.
Right on, Brother Ted. Love, thank you so much, man. Thank you so as much always, for contributing to this program. Peace to you, my brother. Peace.
Asante sana.
Yeah, I really appreciate Brother Ted Lusk. I really do. Good afternoon.
Brother Oshie.
Yes.
All right.
Ah! Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, it's LaRue Ned, Black Laws.
Black Laws.
Great. I didn't see, all I saw was a Milwaukee caller, man. Oh, this is great. How you been, man?
Man, I'm doing all right, man.
Good. Well, I'm glad you tuned in, man.
Yes, sir, man. I tune in when I can, man.
Yeah,
you know, I went in there. Talking about black women, man, we've had some influential ones. I put out that Francis Cress Wealthy. I'm going to go over that.
Right on. All right. Hey.
You know, man, shoot.
Yeah.
Man, just goes to show you, man, the genius of our people, and especially the genius that's in our women. I mean, they're not just followers of men.
Right.
But they do, but they are still in harmony with us, I believe.
Black people. No doubt.
What we do, they support, or sometimes we support what they do. Mm-hmm. Yin and yang, almost.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back and forth. But I had to go in there and pull out a Sherazade Ali's book.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go over there, man. She broke it down. Black for understanding black women and for understanding black men. Because we need to understand each other. So you have to do two. Right. But one of the things, man, we talk about the European, is one of the differences between European thinking and black African thinking is that Europeans want to dominate nature.
Right.
So it will rule over nature. Mm-hmm. Even though everything they learn comes from nature.
Mm-hmm.
So they think they can learn. They learn enough about nature, they will be able to dominate over nature. Everything they learn comes from nature. We, as African people, we live in harmony with nature.
Right.
Right. And so that's the difference. And so because they want to dominate nature, that's what puts them at odds with their own women. And because we live in harmony with nature, that's kept us in harmony with our women.
Right.
But man, it's a good show, man.
Well, I appreciate you, man. I mean, you should have been on Monday, man. I had Brother Ayo Kamathi, the Irritated Genie, on, and we had a great program, man, talking about what's happening in Africa and the future of Africa with the Hillel, with, you know, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. Yeah, it's a great program. I really appreciate that program. In fact, you know, you can go get that program by timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com. And hit the top of the page is podcast programs. Click on that to drop down as African Perspective, and there will be those programs that are dated and titled. And one you want is dated on the 10th. March 10th.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah.
Do anything on Neely Fuller?
Oh, of course I did. Yeah. Oh, yes. Definitely. Played some of his stuff that you can get off of YouTube. little quips of Neely Fuller. Most definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, man, I was surprised how she, Francis Crest, how she supported him, man. How she, you know, kind of brought him into the light, man. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah, and they worked well together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, they worked well together.
Alive, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, always. Yeah, Neely Fuller. You know, he's just as much in the compensatory that Francis Crest Welsing presented with the, you know, 9 areas of people activity where racism is prominent. It's racism is in everything the European does. It's who and what he is, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Which conforms to his way of thinking of what to dominate instead of living in harmony with.
Yeah. Well, see, I once again, as I try to bring out in, you know, in my programs, and this is definitely in previous programs, is that the Europeans' development, his evolutionary development, causes his behavior to be such that I got to control it, I got to dominate it. And then, I was here in Atlanta with Mama Marimba, who's a great friend of Francis, and we had a presentation that both of them presented at. They both presented at this a presentation here in Atlanta and many years ago. And Frances Crest said she was in her kitchen, and it really came to her why these crackers are the way they are. And she said the real deal is the fact that when they went around, after they came out of that medieval time, after the Moors, who had been in the western part of Europe, enlightening them for almost 700 years, from 711 to 1492, then they came out of that, and then they came together and they said, hey, you know what? We war amongst ourselves because we are very warmongering people. We're very warlike people. But we're going to come together on everybody who is outside of us. And when they went out, and they encountered other people, they didn't come to trade, they didn't come to bargain, they didn't come to, no, they came to take, and they took the women, and they seen that the offspring did not look like them. And she said that this caused an innate fear in them, understanding that they could be genetically annihilated. So they got to control that. They got to control the world. They are less than 10% of the world's population, but yet they control about 80 to 85% of the world's resources and land. That's how deep it is. And of course, they're so tough that many people who are melanated claim whiteness.
and Brother Oshie, the one thing that gives them the power, the Europeans, the power to do what they do, is what they learn from nature, and they call it technology.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us, man, have been, I would say, well, I remember back in the days, older people would say, well, if God wanted us to fly, he would have gave us wings, and they wouldn't fly in airplanes, you know. And so a lot of us have been turned off of that against the power of technology. But we were the first ones to develop technology.
Right.
So
yes. Yes.
In our nature.
Yes.
Right. So when we get to the point where we use technology for more than just entertainment, mm-hmm. then you know, that's going to be another major step in our direction.
Right. That's our right. Because I mean, the technology should facilitate us becoming better as human beings as we move into the future, with ability to have more harmony with our nature, because that's very important, to have harmony with nature. The European wants to subdue and control nature, you know, and as a consequence, look at what is happening, climate change, you know, because they're not in control, excuse me, because they're not in harmony with it. They want to control it. And now, what you're going to see, Brother Ned, I ain't got to tell you, you're observant. You're going to see more storms longer times, more earthquakes, harder ones, more hurricanes, more vicious. You know, it's going to be worse and worse.
In the fire.
Yeah.
In the fire.
Yep.
Yep.
So it's going to happen, man. It's going to happen because they see what ruled in Kemet was, of course, Ma'at. Ma'at guided the people, which is a female. It's that feminine energy. Ma'at. Harmony, reciprocity, order, balance, you know, all of those things, you know, were the guide of the people. They were the guide of the people. In fact, when you passed, and then you would have to recite the 42 declarations of innocence of Ma'at, I have not. And your heart is being weighed by the feather of Ma'at. And if your heart becomes imbalanced, then your soul will be eaten by the beast of unjust souls, and your ass will not go on to live in that paradise. Your ass is done. Because why? You have done these things on earth. And when asked about them, you lied. You know? So, right. To me, you should live a righteous life to your best of your abilities. But, I mean, I know we know what we're in. We're in America. This place ain't right. This is all about greed. It's all about trying to get yours and undermining and taking from others. That's the mentality.
Exactly.
Yep.
And that's why we got the president we got now.
Yeah. Yes. Prime example. Good point. Because look at him. Amoral son of a... Look at him. Stankin' ass. I hate this man. I've never liked, Brother LaRue, I've never liked that man, ever. I remember him on programs way back in the 80s and so forth. And now he's the president of the United States. The shit ain't funny, but it is. You know, because look what's happening. Look what's happening. Huh?
And it was a black lady on the bus, and so we sat down next to each other, and I really, she didn't look like she had too much going for herself. But one thing she kept saying over and over again, we all we got. And it wasn't until I got off the bus later that I began to realize the significance of that statement. We are all we got. So we can look at everything else. I mean, money and all that. But we're all that we got. You know what I'm saying? So that's where our focus should be on us.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Because once we internally purge ourselves of all this ignorance, all this stupidity, and doubt, and we look at each other with respect and willingness to work together, to bring family together, you know, community together. Also, too, with a side eye for our enemies. That's the problem. We don't know. A lot of times, do we have an enemy? Hell yeah, you do. Europeans have made it such. You know, look at their history. And so we put him or them in their proper place and go about doing things to build us up and build up our lives and connecting. We have a continent. We have a continent with all the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark. And so we need to control that. We need to find ways to extract it, make it, and then if the world wants something, it will pay fair market value price for it. I've been telling people many times on this program about Howard Nichols, go to YouTube and you put in Howard Nichols, you this racist son of a bitch. He talks about how Africa should remain poor. Africa should never be able to manufacture anything. We should always try to get Africa's resources for little value or little price or free. You know? So, because they... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
In the end, I was thinking about this. In the end, around the world, Africa might be the only continent that's left after these Europeans finished fighting each other and disrespecting nature. And Africa has not done, I mean, at least black people in Africa have not done that, abused it. Point where nature.
Right. But there's still climatic problems on the continent because climate change is a global situation, unfortunately. So there is some issues, but I understand what you're saying, and I kind of agree with that, you know, that there are certain areas of Africa that it can be developed and it'd be like paradise, you know. And so what we need to do is control our lands, is bring Africans together, you know, from throughout the continent and throughout the diaspora. Because my contention is, if you are an African, you have the right, or should have the right to go home if where you're living is not, you know, treating you right, or your living conditions are so horrible that you should go home, you know. Look at us in the diaspora. There's more of us in Brazil than any country outside of Nigeria. But look how we live in Brazil. Look how we're treated. The only time that we as Africans, particularly our women, give note is during Carnival, the festival that just happened a couple weeks ago, better known as Mardi Gras, whatever. But in Brazil, we live in slums, in the hills, the favelas. We have menial work, you know?
Right.
They're just now starting to have a so-called rights movement in Brazil where, you know, we're challenging the governments to, you know, but that requires leadership in the government. Because there was other governments, like when Bolsonaro was in, he can give less than a rat's ass about Africans, black people, you know, in Brazil. And when you look at TV, to even then and probably even today, we're maids or butlers or workers, you know. So, yeah, man, it's a global situation. But to me, what's most important is for Africa to be liberated and for Africans to seize control of our land and our resources and our people. That's the bottom line. Man, LaRue, good to hear from you.
Let me on for a minute, man. That's beautiful. Whenever I get a chance, I'll tune you in, man.
Please do, okay? Always, my brother. Hey, man, I'll be in the city next month. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You know where I'll be.
I hear you. All right, brother LaRue. Take care.
My brother.
Peace. Oh man, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a great day and be safe. Hope to see you on Friday, family. Peace.
Peace.
Hey, oh, great